There are a million ways to make money in the food service industry. You just have to find one. On the Titans of Food Service podcast, I interview real life movers and shakers in the food game who cut through all the noise to get to the top. My name is Nick Portillo, and welcome to the Titans of Food Service podcast. Let's jump right into it. Here we go. Paul, welcome. Welcome to the Titans of Food Service podcast. Thanks for signing on and joining me here today.
Yeah. Hey, Nick, I'm excited about it, man. Looking forward to it.
All right. So I'd like to start off with the Fiery Five food service questions, which are fun, just easy icebreaker questions. Are you ready?
Hey, I love game shows.
Okay, good. So the first one is, if you could have dinner with any one person, whether it's where that person is historical or alive, who would it be and why?
Well, to steal someone from your home state there, it would be Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan was an amazing person who had moved, you know, course corrected in his life from acting, from sort of went to an obscure college, became an actor, kind of a B-roll guy who ultimately got into politics and became the president, and the rest is history. And I think he had the ability to galvanize so many people. And it was with his leadership and humor and just a funny guy, and it'd be great to have dinner with him.
Totally. Yeah. He was a California cowboy. We have a couple California cowboys. So where I live here in Orange County, John Wayne, another California cowboy. And I live in the city of Newport Beach, and he's all over the place in terms of like his name's on things, and he's just well known and well respected in this community. So I like that. Ronald Reagan, great. And we have his presidential library in Simi Valley.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd love to go there.
Yeah. Okay. Question number two. I like that. If someone had one night in your state of Virginia, where must they go eat and why?
Wow. One night in Virginia, where should they go eat? Well, I am a huge fan of the beach. I spent a long time at the beach here in Virginia, and there's a great seafood restaurant down on the oceanfront in Virginia Beach called Waterman's. And it's not a super high level restaurant. It's one of these kind of fun touristy places, but it's just frenetic in activity. And there's just a beautiful view right over the ocean, and you can never go wrong with that.
You know, I've never been to, I know we were talking a little bit off camera, we've never been to Virginia before, but is that, I'm going to ask a dumb question now. Martha's Vineyard, is that Virginia?
No, that's Massachusetts.
Okay. Isn't there another, what are the beach cities, like the well-known beach cities there in Virginia?
So mostly in Virginia, you have Virginia Beach. And then if you go just that, which is right at the border of Virginia and North Carolina. And so when you slide into North Carolina, a lot of people know the Outer Banks of North Carolina, like Kitty Hawk, where the Wright brothers flew the first airplane. That's a big destination for a lot of people. But yeah, Virginia actually doesn't have a lot of beaches outside of Virginia Beach proper. It's kind of remote outside of that.
Learn something new every day.
Yeah.
All right. Question number three. If you could only have one type of cuisine for the rest of your life, what would it be?
Oh, that's easy. It would be Italian. I love pasta bolognese and red wine. I'm good.
Are there any foods or dishes you've wanted to try but haven't yet?
No. I think I've tried everything I want to try. Now, my wife makes me try other things that I don't necessarily want to try.
Sure.
But yeah, sure. I love I'm kind of set. Now, my daughter, on the other hand, is always trying something new, and she's 20, about to be 21, and, you know, she's the one that really pushes the envelope and challenges us.
Yeah, sounds like a foodie.
Yeah, for sure.
Do you have a favorite food-related memory from traveling?
Food-related memory from traveling. Wow, that is a good question. So, yes, I do.
Okay.
So, about 4 years ago on spring break, I took the family to ski in Utah, and we went to Snowbird, which is one of our favorite places. And they have this lodge there called the Cliff Lodge. And at the very top of the lodge, they had just either built it or renovated, I forget which, they had this amazing spread of a breakfast every morning, and everything from, sockeye salmon and, and capers to, you name it, they had it all. Beautiful fresh fruit, I mean, just laid out, and you had this amazing view out the window from the top over the slopes and watching the snow come in. And every morning, again, my daughter, we have only one child, and she's like, I want to go to that buffet breakfast. And I'm like, absolutely, it's just an amazing thing. So that was a great time.
All right. Well, thank you. I'm also an only child too, so I know how that goes.
Yeah. Yeah. You kind of get everything you want and nothing that you want.
That's right. That's right. Well, thanks for humoring me on the Fire 5 food service questions. Why don't we jump into, you know, who are you and what is your business?
Yeah, absolutely. So, as you introduced, I'm Paul Neal, based out of Virginia, and I'm in real estate finance. Really, my big focus is empowering business owners in all classes. So food service business owners, for sure, restaurant owners, small, you know, cafe owners. We were talking off air about a popcorn store owner. But we empower business owners to really to accelerate their wealth creation through property ownership. We focus on really focus on helping those owners acquire the physical property that they operate out of, because it adds so many advantages to their long-term strategy and long-term goals, again, of wealth creation, freedom. Because most business owners go into business because they want control, right? They want independence. They want to be I call it freedom, you know, do what you want to do, when you want to do it, with whom you want to do it, where you want to do it, right? And it's one way to, by owning that property, is one way to accelerate that process and just add fuel to what you're already doing. So that's our focus and our passion and what we do.
If I were, let's say, a restaurant owner or a chef, and I'm leasing my unit right now, I'm looking to take it to the next level. I want to, or I've always had the thought of wanting to own my own physical, you know, brick and mortar location. Yeah. How could I generate wealth from owning that property?
Well, there are a number of ways that you could do it. You know, first off, you have to talk about, you know, from a wealth creation standpoint, it's sort of best to plug the holes in the bucket before you start adding more water into it, right? Okay. So when you're leasing a space for your business, and again, to put this in context, this is not for a startup business, right? This is for a business that's established and they've got a track record and they've got a consistency and sort of a long-term game plan. So you realize that the rent that you're paying is essentially empowering somebody else, right? You're trading dollars monthly for the privilege of having that space, which is a value, right? You have to operate your business somewhere, but you're foregoing the opportunity to put the rent dollars into your own pocket and build your own equity. So you're basically padding the pocket of the landlord, essentially your tenant. So so by owning, you capture some of the rent dollars turned into equity. You're foregoing the opportunity for appreciation of the property over time. Taxes also are a big concern for business owners, because when you start doing well in business, as I say in my book, you become the IRS's fanboy, because the more money you make, the more they phase out deductions and things like that. And so by owning a building, you can actually do some things creatively and legally in the tax department, where you have a real estate entity actually owns the building, and then your operating company or your restaurant will lease from the building. And so you can capture some depreciation tax savings, and you can offset some of your income that way too. So you lose that opportunity by renting from someone else. And then the other thing we have a lot of clients do, they go into it with a perspective of, if we're talking just the financial piece, is not only are they want to buy a space for themselves, but they want to buy extra space because they want to lease that out. And so they become not only an owner of the building, but also a landlord to someone else. And that someone else is now deferring a significant part of their payment. And so it's less expensive in some cases, and actually many cases, than the rent rate that they're carrying now. For instance, this is not a food service guy, but one client we just finished working with, he built a 12,000 square foot warehouse. He's in a personal service business. He does, he's a, like a general contractor, does like high end repair or renovations on homes. Anyway, so he built a 12,000 square foot warehouse. He's going to occupy about 7,000 feet. And then the other 5,000 he's leasing out to clients. And when you run the math based on the current rent rates in the market, he's almost zero out of his pocket monthly. So plus he's got much more space. He's got new space. He's got appreciation opportunity. And I've got a ton of stories, but that's just, so you're giving up those opportunities by not owning and by leasing. And again, leasing makes sense in a lot of cases. Don't get me wrong. It's not a, you know, one size fits all. Everyone should do it. And in some cases, you might not be in a physical location where it's easy to move. But interestingly enough, in the food service, so one of my clients is a guy named Osman. He emigrated here from Turkey 15 years ago, and he owns a couple pizza businesses. So he built these pizza businesses, and he was leasing two locations. And, you know, the pizza business is pretty, you know, a lot of these smaller food service businesses are more, you know, locally based, right? So, you know, you're probably not going to drive 30 miles to a pizza shop. So he's a location, put, I think, $80,000 or $90,000 in the kitchen, renovating it, getting it just the way he wanted, in the building 8 years. And the landlord knocks on the door and says, hey, I'm going to sell your building. So he was leasing. Now, fortunately for him, the landlord said, I'm going to give you the first right of refusal to buy the building. But, you know, he didn't have to do that. And so Osmond was in a position, well, I'm either going to have to buy this building or I'm going to have to uproot my entire business, find a comparable location nearby that doesn't disturb my customer base, and make this transition without, you know, losing significantly. So so for him, it was more of a defensive position. You know, he's like, okay, but his reaction, unfortunately, he was able to get ahead of that. But we like to educate people, particularly if they're in a business that really is dependent on a local geographical area, that you need to be in control of that, because if you lose control of that, what do you do?
Yeah, it's a good point. You know, looking at the real estate climate right now, how it currently is with the high interest rate loans and, you know, how that looks, I would imagine, you know, if I'm just looking at it as a pure investment, mm-hmm. that right now there's probably maybe not a lot of buyers because mm-hmm. the environment of interest rates being so high. However, there may be opportunity for people out there who were to purchase a brick and mortar location, and potentially in a couple of years, as the interest rate comes down, to do a cash out refinance, and potentially may use mm-hmm. that money to buy a different property. Is that, what do you think of that idea?
So yeah, that is one strategy. I mean, you know, so kind of to frame the interest rate conversation. I mean, obviously they go up and they go down, and, you know, commercial rates right now for owner occupied space are, I mean, we're in the sixes. So it's not like it's crazy. Yeah. Now, relative to 2 years ago, 3 years ago with COVID, but that was an anomaly that, mm-hmm. you know, we've never seen. So, and depending on the type of space, Nick, that they're looking for, it is still actually very competitive. You know, if you're looking to buy a large office building or whatnot, then yeah, you probably have a lot of opportunity, you know, to step in there because of the changing dynamic of the workforce. But small retail, small flex, warehouse space, things like that, that most of our clients are typically buying, is in pretty high demand in many areas. To your point, though, in terms of cash out refinance, so that is an option, and that's one of the strategies as you build equity in a property over time, you know, sort of a forced savings program. You are building equity as you pay down the loan on your building, and your property will appreciate, because we know that things can be up and down, like with appreciation real estate, but generally over time, mm-hmm. it's going to appreciate, right? Mm-hmm. And so, again, not a short-term strategy, a long-term strategy, but mm-hmm. so 5 and 10 years from now, it will be more worth more typically than, you know, it is today. Plus you pay down mm-hmm. on that. So you have accumulated a certain amount of equity that gives you leverage for maybe using to open another location, as we've had some business owners do, like, okay, this coffee shop's doing great in Great Bridge, so now we want to open one over in Greenbrier. We've now got a brand and a following, and we have some equity, so let's go pivot over here. And the interesting thing mm-hmm. is, when you're buying real estate for your business, we would classify it as owner-occupied, where your business lives in it. You can have 10 owner-occupied buildings because your business might be in 10 locations, right? Mm. Which is different than traditional just investment real estate. And so the terms are more favorable. The opportunities are to get in are more favorable. But once you have that equity appreciation developing, not only can you leverage that for another location, but it also gives you leverage or strength with other lending opportunities. So let's say maybe you wanted to acquire a competitor and, hey, somebody's retiring. They've had a, you've got a donut shop across town. There's a successful one, but you know, they're retiring and it's up for sale, or, you know, it's coming for sale. You could leverage that with the bank and probably buy that second location in many cases without no money out of your pocket, just because you have the equity on your balance sheet. Where if you're renting, most service businesses and a lot of food service restaurants, things like that, there's not a lot of equity in the business per se, right? You've got the brand, you've got the name and the image of maybe the chef, and, you know, but if the chef leaves, right? If I'm in the business and I hire a star chef, the chef leaves, what do I have, right? I've got, you know, if I don't have the building, I've got a customer base that hopefully stays, a client base, but maybe not, right? They might follow the chef or whatever. So from a lending standpoint, from a bank and kind of a world standpoint, when you look at that balance sheet, owning that piece of property over time adds more significant value to your business. So flip it on the other side. If you do want to sell that food service business or whatever business, you know, 15 years from now, and it's tied to a piece of real estate that's paid off or has significant equity, then the buyer, you're going to have more buyer options because banks are more interested in financing a business acquisition that includes real estate. And the terms are always a lot better than just buying a business per se. So instead of getting a term to buy a business, you're going to be limited to maybe a 10-year term. But if it has real estate, you might go out to 20, 25 years, which makes the payments a lot lower. It makes the deal maybe doable when it wouldn't be before. And so now you've got a larger universe of buyers for your business because you have equity. Or if you're in that situation, you could be like Kathy, a friend of mine. She's a physician, so a medical service provider, who her husband, Jim, you know, kind of cajoled her into buying her building about 13 years ago. Well, just dial it forward. She's paid off the building, right? She was going to pay somebody over 13 years. Well, she's approaching retirement. One of these medical sort of aggregators came in and they're buying up practices. And so they made her an offer to buy her practice. So she took the buyout. She's working for them for another 3 or 4 years on her terms. So she got a buyout. She's getting a salary. And oh, by the way, because her practice was local, like a local restaurant or whatever, they wanted to keep the practice in her building that she owned. So now they lease the building out from her at a substantial amount of money monthly. So she's got the cash flow in the building coming to her, plus her retirement, plus the payout. And she could eventually sell the building if she wanted to or whatever. But she was going to pay somebody for the privilege of operating her medical practice, you know. So this is sort of the things that some of the benefits and opportunities you have if you're building equity with real estate. You're essentially running two businesses. You take one business, Nick, and you're turning it into two. You've got an operating business, your primary business, and then your real estate business that you can now do other things with.
If you occupy the building, right, for your business, can you take the bonus depreciation? Can you accelerate the depreciation all in 1 year?
You can do a cost segregation study and do, and I'm going to footnote this and say I'm not a CPA, right? But you can accelerate a lot of the depreciation based upon, you know, some of the equipment in your building versus the useful life of the real estate. So yeah, there's definitely, you can speed that process up. Yeah,
because I was thinking, you know, because I think by the law allows, I can't remember the section it is in the tax code, but I think this year in 2024, you can like take bonus depreciation was maybe 60% of the overall cost of whatever the purchase is. So you put down your down payment, right, and then you can essentially accelerate the depreciation across the entire amount, even though you've only put in the down payment across on the building.
Yeah. So real estate's a little bit different than like asset acquisition and whatnot. So I would say I'd be cautious on that, but you definitely can depreciate, and there's certain parts of it you can accelerate, which is certainly helpful to offset your taxable situation.
Yeah, definitely. There's so many different resources for sure. I like what you're saying as well. You know, finding a property, because I've definitely looked into it, that you occupy a certain portion of the building and then rent out the other side of the portion, the other portion of the building to somebody else or to a different business. That way it helps take down the cost of the, you know, essentially the mortgage, having somebody else feed the money into you. And as you build equity, especially here in California, we're definitely in a appreciation investment play out here, where I know, things are appreciating so fast in this state. I know other states are different, I think, you know, in terms of real estate investments, maybe. I understand more like multifamily type investing, you know, and other states are better for rent growth and just kind of monthly cash flow, where California is really that strong appreciation play of holding it for as long as you can and then selling it at a premium.
Yeah, yeah, no doubt. And, you know, it's interesting you bring up multifamily, because a lot of our clients, you know, they also do other investments. We do a lot of real estate investment there as well. And, you know, when you think about a multifamily investment, you know, a lot of times an investor will get their feet wet, like in a single family, and then maybe they'll look for a duplex or whatever, kind of work their way up. And, you know, generally in those situations, you're going to need 20% down to get in a property like that. Mm-hmm. The crazy thing is when you buy your own property as an owner occupant, we can do typically 10%, in many cases, 0 to 5%. So you can literally, you can leverage. Yeah. And they don't realize that they're like, you know, they're, you know, ginning up money, all this capital to put in to real estate, you know, for their down payments and foregoing the opportunity underneath their feet, that's easier to do in so many cases with, you know, in terms of less capital on the table. And it's just kind of funny when they recognize that opportunity, like, okay, well, it's the same idea. Why not do a commercial duplex, right? I'm going to own this half. I'm going to lease this half out. And then to your point, if my business continues to grow, I can either then move to another building and put another tenant in that one, or I can excuse the tenant that's currently there and expand in the space of my own building. So I've got flexibility, whereas I'm the one making the decisions versus having a landlord make decisions for me. You know, at lease renewal term, you know, hey, we're up, you know, 10% on renewal, or we don't want to renew because it's not really serving our purpose anymore. You know, there's just a lot of variables that you have to contend with if you're not in control.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think I've heard this now. I'd have to look it up to see if it's fact, but I think the largest real estate firm, or one of them in the world, is McDonald's, where their model is, you know, the franchisee, they operate the physical McDonald's location, but McDonald's corporate owns the physical real estate, which is different than other franchising opportunities out there. And it's very smart of what they've built.
No, you're exactly right, Nick. Their whole model was they're in the real estate business. In fact, I talk about that some in the book. I've got a client, partners, Robbie and Mark. They own car washes. And so they started 15 years ago when they were 5-6 years out of college. I think their dad co-signed for the first one anyway. So, but their whole mission was to try to find car washes in high traffic areas that, if they could just essentially, I mean, this is their thinking when they started, if they could essentially just break even on the operation of the car wash, make enough money to kind of survive, then eventually they could parlay that and sell, you know, the sale of the property. And so they started with one little dinky ragtag car wash and parlayed it literally over, I don't know, it was 12, 13 years to using 1031 exchanges, which is another way to take the equity out of this real estate and parlay it without taxes, at least delay it, into a large eight-figure sale. And it was and the byproduct was, they told me, I had them on my show one time, they said they did well operationally as well, but that was not the goal. That was almost the benefit. The goal was, hey, we're gonna buy this real estate and let it appreciate, let somebody else pay for it over 10, 20 years, like the comp.
Yeah. So they would take one of their car wash properties, sell it, put in a 1031 exchange, and then buy another property with it at a higher, you know, higher value.
Yeah, they did that, and they would do what you referenced earlier. They would take the equity that they had accumulated in one as well, and maybe not sell it, and they would use that for the down payment on the next one. And so they were scraping as much equity as they could, and they would sell when they needed to, but it was all to move to larger, bigger, better, faster, you know, and more profitable, more high traffic areas. And then one day the venture capital guy showed up, knocked on the door and said, hey, well, would you like to sell? And Robbie said,
that's right,
I'll sell for this. And they didn't blink, or, you know, bat an eye or blink, which is just crazy. It was kind of stupid money actually, but they had a good day.
I'm sure you can, you know, if you look at some of the really big real estate investors out there, like a Guy Kiyosaki, who's the author of Rich Dad, Poor Dad, you know, he's really taken that exact model. Start with one and, you know, you sell it into another, 1031 exchange it into another. And like over time, you build such incredible wealth. And as you're trading each building up, you're also essentially pushing that tax liability forward. And not a lot of times these guys aren't paying those taxes on that, on these real estate assets.
Yeah. And ironically, even they sold out in this particular case, they were able to take, even though they sold their business with the real estate, they were able to take a very large gain, and they redeployed a lot of that into another 1031, just income producing property. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's just the wheels keep turning. And these guys are pretty young, so they're going to enjoy the benefit for a long time. And then ultimately, you know, their children will benefit from it.
That's right. Well, Paul, tell me about your book. You know, the title of it, how can somebody find it? Maybe some of the nuggets that are in your book.
Yeah. So I'll hold it up here for you to see. Unleash Your Business, Unlock Wealth, Autonomy, and Control by Buying Your Building and Firing Your Landlord. It's available on Amazon, but really, I have a website, ownyourbuildingnow.com. ownyourbuildingnow.com, and you could go there. I give it away for free. You just got to pay shipping on the book, and I'll mail a copy. I also have a 20-question, 2-minute assessment that you can take. It's really kind of an e-quiz we put together that you answer the questions. And really, the fundamental question is, hey, is owning commercial property right for my business? So you go through that, gives you a customized report in four specific areas. We don't charge anything for that. That's just for knowledge and experience. But the book is really, it was fun to write. It's got a lot of these stories in it of clients we've served and the dilemmas they face and the opportunities they had and sort of the beginning, the middle, and the end. It addresses a lot of the more specific questions like, you know, so if you've never bought commercial real estate, then you don't realize the process is completely different from residential. You know, everyone understands residential process. Mm-hmm. It's pretty boilerplate, pretty simple. Commercial is not like that at all. So we get into the differences, get into the different loan programs and types that are available. I get into some of the key sort of pitfalls that you gotta look out for. And it's all about sort of being a guide and education, kind of opening your eyes to say, hey, maybe this is a possibility for me. And of course, you know, we help people that are interested in that, you know, so if someone goes through the book, then, you know, are interested in diving a little deeper, we could do a free discovery call. And we have about 6 sort of criteria that we like to flesh out with someone to say, okay, yeah, you are sort of buyer ready, or no, you're not. And here's why. Mm. So, because it's a big step for people. And so, it has to be right. And so if you don't check all the boxes, then we could say, you know, why and you know, whatnot. So our clients seem to like that. And we're very consultative and educational, and that's why the book and so forth, because I'm just passionate about it. I believe ownership, that we need to own things, right? We got huge companies and, you know, big government, big companies, big banks and all that. And we don't want them to own it all. We as entrepreneurs, we need to own things, you know, real estate for our families and our communities. And we're the ones that employ people, and we're the ones that, you know, it's our values that get down to, you know, our family and our community. And so pretty passionate about it. So you can check that out. ownyourbuildingnow.com. I also have a podcast, the Brick and Mortar Money Show. So where we talk about this sort of stuff, you know, investing, buying your business and buying buildings and things like that. That's kind of it.
Incredible. Well, Paul, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. I enjoyed our conversation here today. And thank you so much for taking the time to come on here and talk to me.
Yeah, Nick, I really appreciate it, man. I had a great time, enjoyed it. And I think you're probably not the first person I've ever met that hasn't been to Virginia, but I haven't met anybody in a while just because I live here. So had a great time, man.
Thanks, Paul.